listening to the Open Wheel Spectacular Podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Hello, world. On this edition of the Open Wheel Spectacular, you're going to hear from Mike Fedorchak, who took time out of his nonstop schedule to discuss the upcoming Rumble in the Expo taking place in Fort Wayne at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum Exposition Center on December 29th and 30th. Tonight, joining me in the co-host chair is Michigan's own Derek Bean. Derek, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on, TJ.
Oh, this is going to be fun, I think. We're going to try some different things with this podcast this year, and I'm glad you were able to come into the co-host chair on what was a quiet past week in racing. Nothing really happened, did it?
Nothing that I saw out there, for sure.
No, nothing to discuss coming up, in our next segment. And speaking of that, let's just dive right into it. Our discussion on the hot topics in the open wheel world.
The latest dirt.
Justin Fiedler from Dirt Tracker broke the story over the weekend, confirmed by Fast on Dirt series owner Aaron Fry and other promoters that we reached out to, that an agreement was struck to keep Ohio Sprint Speed Week together as one event. The races will be split on the pay-per-view side between Dirt Vision and Flow Racing. Before this, we were potentially looking at two Ohio Speed Weeks running on the same week. Thankfully, we avoided that. Derek, were you surprised the deal got done?
I was very surprised, honestly, because leading up to it, all the talk was it's not going to happen. There's going to be two speed weeks, and the line was drawn in the sand, and these tracks were going to be with World of Outlaws and Dirt Vision. These tracks were going to be with Flow, and it wasn't going to happen. But luckily, cooler heads must have prevailed, and 100% best case scenario for Ohio Sprint Speed Week.
I should know better than the doubt Aaron Fry. He's one of the most passionate guys I've ever met about sprint car racing. And I'll admit, when I first heard about this happening and the way the whole Flow thing went down and everything, obviously I wasn't real happy about it. This is our backyard, right? For both of us.
Right.
And and basically it had this happen. And at first it looked like it was going to come together, and then it all fell apart. And I thought for sure, like much like you, we were heading towards two separate speed weeks, basically divide the state right down the middle, because it, Ohio demographically is a very diverse state. I mean, you think about Northern Ohio is like a completely different culture than Southern Ohio. And I think some of that played into this a little bit. I mean, economics and a bunch of different factors into this. For Aaron and all the promoters to work this out, and they all deserve credit, not just Aaron, but all the promoters that agreed to this, and even Flow Racing, who I didn't think was going to move off of Speed Week has to be on Flow. I thought for sure that was going to be a sticking point. So kudos to all of them, because this is a way better situation than we were going to end up with, and glad we did. So on to the next topic, High Limit Sprint Car Series also announced a charter program for their car owners slated to start in 2025 and 2026, with the top five in points next year earning the first five charters, and the next top five without charters will earn the next five to start with 10 charters. Derek, your thoughts on charters coming into the sprint car world?
I'm not sure I'm smart enough to fully comprehend the whole charter system, but I do think that my one worry would be that it's going to further divide the teams that are at the top from kind of the rest. I know anything that's new is going to be left or met with skepticism. So I'm going to kind of sit back and see what happens, but that would be my one fear. The other fear would be whether or not guys are going to be willing to join on to High Limit at a later point. 2-3 years down the road, are you kind of limiting yourself to these 10, 12 teams without teams being able to really jump in without maybe having to go through some hoops? Those are kind of my worries, I guess, with the charter system.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of barrier of entry either. I mean, it's already a cool kids club to a degree, right? Because of the expenses and how much it costs, be a 410 sprint car rider. I know I couldn't afford it. Pretty sure you couldn't afford it either. and I mean, so we're not in position to do that. I'm not totally against it, but you know what I'd like to see? I have recently, for some reason, gotten into English Premier League soccer a little bit, mainly because I love watching sports in the morning with coffee, right? And it's on in the morning. So one of the things I love about English soccer is you can win your way up into different tiers, right? So all these soccer teams are in all these different leagues. You can win your way in. I would love to see this become merit-based, to where the teams, like the bottom charter, maybe every 2 years or whatever, like, is up for grabs, and someone in that lower tier where they'd get tow money still could win their way up into it. I mean, I know there might have to be some compensation for the person losing it or something, depending on the legalities of it, but if it was merit-based, I'd be a lot more for it. Now, if it ends up being just we're going to hand these until they sell them, as long as they show up all the time, I'm not as big of a fan of that. I mean, I think there should be some performance incentive put in there. And, you know, think about this, Derek. Imagine if we had a season finale where that last spot's on the line pretty much every year. I mean, you're not only racing for a championship, but you're seeing who's going to get voted off the island. Would that interest you as a fan?
Absolutely. Anytime you can get more eyes on particular races, that's going to be good for the sport. So I do like that merit-based feel to the final charter. So I guess it's going to have to see how it all plays out, really.
Hopefully someone at High Limits listening to this. But yeah, I mean, you know, think about it. You know, who's going to be voted off the island could be interesting. And everyone loves an underdog story. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Initially, right. I'm a little skeptical, but we'll have to see how it plays out.
I agree.
You know, most of the talk last week was about wing sprint car racing and High Limit and World of Outlaws and everything. Quietly, the USAC National Sprint Car Series has assembled a tremendous roster for next year. I'm upwards of anywhere from 12 to 15 teams being on the tour full-time next year. Derek, is that surprise you a little bit, that many cars not only are going to be committed, but the range of young to veteran drivers in that series?
I mean, this is probably the most excited I've been for a USAC season. It seems like they've been trending the last few years of we're losing this team, we're losing this team. And now all of a sudden this year, it's like, bam, everyone's signing on with USAC. And you, like you said, you got exciting young drivers like Trey Osborne and Joey Amantia. You have your veterans. You got KTJ coming back full time. So it's just the depth is going to be there. They really haven't lost anyone. The Clausen Marshall car is kind of up in the air, I guess. And then CV, I'm assuming, has a ride, or he wouldn't have left the 2B. So
I'm thinking we'll hear about CV soon, by the way.
So you're like, you're not losing anyone essentially, and you're gaining all these cars, and non-wing racing is as good as it comes. So it's going to be, an awesome year for USAC.
I think Amantia in particular is a really interesting one, because that is a team coming over from the USAC East Coast Sprint Car Series, which has been really beating the drum for non-wing sprint car racing in Pennsylvania and along the East Coast. And that series is on the grow. It's extremely competitive. Those cars, Derek, when they show up here, are running near the front during Indiana Sprint Week and other weeks.
Right. And now when they're going to have that extra experience of running these tracks more often, they're going to obviously have their notebooks. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what these guys can do.
It's also going to be interesting to see how some of the ride changes play out. Of course, Jake Swanson and 2B Racing and Dazen Persley and the Team Arizona car, just a couple of the changes coming up this year. I mean, there's always been a lot of movement the past couple of years in that series, but man, I mean, this is quite a lineup, and I'm just drooling to see like some of these races coming up, like Sprint Week and Let's Race 2 and other things, man, to see this roster go against some of the local Indiana drivers as well.
Right. There's quite a few Southern Indiana tracks I haven't been to, and it's like, man, this might be the year to get down there and watch some USAC racing.
I would definitely agree with that. You know, another thing on the docket with USAC, on the schedules, kind of looking over, one thing I noticed is the USAC Silver Crown event at Winchester Speedway has been moved to the Sunday following Let's Race 2 at Eldora Speedway. Derek, is that you think this is going to be finally the move to help solidify that event? And do you think fans will buy into what used to be a very traditional doubleheader for the USAC series?
I mean, as a race fan, if I was coming from out of town, if you gave me a third race, that seems like it'd be pretty ideal to me. And Winchester obviously is a pretty historic and sweet looking place. So, I mean, I think a lot of people jump on board with, hey, let's hit that show, especially if it's an earlier race or Sunday afternoon, so people can get out of town at a decent time. So I think it's going to be a good feel for the whole weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm old enough, showing my age, that I've done this doubleheader more times than I would care to count. And it's awesome. It works out so well. The tracks are only about an hour apart. You know, it's nothing like grabbing some breakfast after an Eldora show, racing over to Winchester, getting there early, and just for a Sunday afternoon show. And with the SilverCon cars, it'll be cool. I think this is a home run, hopefully, for Brady Bacon and everyone working on the promotion of that Winchester show. Big fan of this. I can't believe we didn't think of this earlier, you know, of doing this with this. And because of USAC going away from the pavement, we haven't had this double header available to us for several years. But hopefully some World of Outlaw fans will go over to check out Winchester Speedway. I don't know, Derek, have you been there yet?
I have not. That's definitely something that's on my list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is one you're going to want to hit because that place, I always joke there's three kinds of racetracks, dirt, pavement, and Winchester. And you get a chance to see that on a great weekend of racing. Another thing coming up out of the weekend, World of Outlaws and High Limit Sprint Car Series obviously were like the big hitters in the trade show this week. Who do you think actually came out better public relations wise from this week after the trade show?
I thought that High Limit seemed to be in the news, at the top of news almost every day with their driver announcements and just the whole way that they put them out there on social media, and everyone was jumping on board with articles and everything. And really, I thought that the World of Outlaws were a little quieter, other than the Donnie Schatz obviously was a pretty big deal. So I thought overall High Limit just seemed to be every day. It's like, what's High Limit doing today? What's High Limit doing today? So I thought they were the winners, in my opinion.
I would agree with that, but with an asterisk. And here's why. High Limit's still in the honeymoon phase, right? Everything right. You're going to announce is brand new and exciting. And and I think what they did with their drivers and their agreements was brilliant, how they've spaced that out. Even to today, we're announcing Chris Windham today joining on the tour. You know, it's all been done really well. But like I said, I think a lot of it might have been, too, because the Outlaws announced a lot of their information before the show going in, and the show was more informational. I think High Limit took better advantage of the show, maybe a little bit. But also, like I said, they had more new things to announce because the series is entirely brand new. Well, that's going to do it for the latest dirt. Derek, when we come back, we're going to hear from Mike Fedorchuk, man, Munchkin, and we're going to talk about the Rumble and the Expo, Derek. And if you haven't been to the Rumble and in the Expo, I mean, it's something unique for all race fans. It's you literally get to see competitors from age 5 to 70 competing indoors that weekend.
Yep, that's a yearly thing. I go every year at least one night, and it's a great place for those of you who have not been.
And so here is Mike Fedorchuk talking about the upcoming Rumble in the Expo. December 29th and 30th, the 25th edition of the Rumble in the Expo is going to take place at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum Exposition Center. And I'm speaking to one of the more influential drivers in that event's history, Mike Fedorchuk. Mike, how is your Rumble prep going so far, getting ready for this year's edition?
Well, I believe we're right on schedule. We are supposed to get some dyno time this Friday. And, you know, depending on how that goes, I think we're ready.
I remember getting a phone call 25 years ago or more, actually, from Jack Calabrese when they decided that they're going to start running in the Exposition Center again. Obviously, you were a winner at the old Fort Wayne over at the hockey arena before the period of time before they didn't race and things moved over to the Expo. What was your first reaction when you heard they were going to go back into the Exposition Center back then to give indoor racing another shot?
Well, I didn't know if it was really a good idea or a bad idea. I mean, I'd raced at the hockey rink. I don't believe at that time I'd even seen the Expo Center or known what it was about. And I didn't attend. I don't think I attended the first two races or the first three races. It was kind of a time in my life when I really wasn't into racing that much again. And I'd heard. The first race that I heard about was the one that Tony was at, and he ended up getting a car John Heidenreich was driving, and I guess he put on a spectacular show and unbelievable drive, and you know it made some news from that.
Yeah, I was there, and I still think it might be the best Tony driving performance I've ever seen in person, by the way.
Okay, well, yeah, there's many.
There are.
But that one obviously just made the news. I don't know if he even finished the race, but I guess he'd spin out and go to the back and come up to the front again. And, I mean, it was something to behold, I guess. So that's how I first learned about the Expo Center. And I think the first time I went may have been 2001. Yeah. And then I think I won in 2002.
Correct.
I don't know. Was it 2002 that I did Tony win in 2001?
I don't recall, but I have you winning in 02. So you're on there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I won a year after he won in the Expo Center. So that must have been, he must have won it in 2001.
Yeah. I mean,
anyways, the Expo Center, I just did an interview with Larry here down at the PRI show, and he wanted the same comparison. And I commented that I believe the Expo Center is a lot more racy than what the old hockey rink was. I think it's a little safer. It has more opportunity to pass, which makes the racing a lot better. And I like that there's a little bit of a runoff area. I mean, if you blow a corner, you're not into the wall per se. You got a little bit of room for cushion. So, yeah, all in all, I just like it a lot better.
You're still racing the Munchkin that you came up with in the late 80s. Are you surprised that that car is still very much at the front of these races, even in 2023? Could you have even imagined that back then?
I am not. No, I couldn't imagine it back then, but because I actually had a hard time getting the car hooked up the first couple times out. In the initial stages of it, because I didn't have enough weight on the back end of it. I had a hard time even getting the tires to turn over until like we got a good tacky concrete floor or rubber floor down there. So yeah, at that point, I wasn't really sure what was going to do. My first debut with that car was on the hockey rink surface, and I was running Goodyear tires at the time, and they were kind of sponsoring me. So I didn't really have a good fair evaluation just because of the difference in the rubber that was on the floor and the rubber that was on my car. Now I went to a race in Illinois, I think it was, and I had a fast time there. I've got a little plaque on my wall for that quick time. That might have been, I forget where that was in Illinois. It was up around Chicago. So yeah, at that point, it became, you know, pretty responsive. Stan Fox ran it at the Milwaukee Mecca Center, and he put on a good showing with it. So, you know, it started showing its capability back then. But and due to the anti-roll bars on it and the way I had things laid out there, I figured it was going to be competitive anywhere. So in that regard, it doesn't surprise me that it's still competitive today, because generally guys still aren't using that technology on their cars like, you know, like what I've got on mine.
How close is the configuration of the car as you run it now to, let's say, like when you're winning midget races at Kalamazoo and some of the bigger tracks once you got it out there? How close do you think the car configuration, or how much has it changed and evolved over the past couple of decades?
Not a whole lot. The shocks are totally different. And, of course, the fuel tank is a lot different than the first one that I ran. And, of course, the weight is a lot different. We've had to add in total over 100 pounds of weight from the original car to where we're at now. So that's a major difference. Other than that, I mean, the basic frame and the axle design and the axle dimensions and the chassis dimensions are exactly the same. I mean, that car that Tony is running now was built in 1988 or 89.
Wow, that's
so
impressive.
You know, and the new cars, I just built five cars that I completed back in April, and those frame dimensions are the same, except for some upgrades to make it USAC legal. It's pretty much the same car as it was back in 98.
It's well documented, so the story about Tony with the poker game and buying the Munchkin and everything. Do you think that had as much to do with your like rekindled interest in coming to race indoors, or do you think you probably would have ended up being a yearly competitor even if that had not happened?
That's a good question. Probably that rekindled my interest in it. And his success with it has obviously rekindled my interest in it. Because every time he mentions my name on my ego meter, it's like an instant boost to the ego meter. So that's, you know, that's what really keeps me kind of involved in it and associated with everything. And it's really my claim to fame, I guess. I mean, I'd rather be noted for other stuff maybe, but I'm just going with it. I love every second of it. And the five cars that I just built are pretty much a result of his success on the track. I don't think there would have been much interest if I would have just been out there running it myself, because I probably wouldn't have been as successful as he is. So he's pretty much the, what do we want to call it, the hood ornament for the whole program. I mean, he's out front. He's just keeping the interest up in it, which is great. I mean, I just feel very lucky to be associated with him and what he's doing.
It seems like some of the current cars can keep pace with you, probably definitely better than they could back, you know, like when I was seeing you dominate places like Kalamazoo and other places. What do you think is the biggest difference in the current cars to be able to keep pace with you in the Munchkin?
Probably, I think there may have gone to a little bit longer wheelbase like I've had. You know, my car that had a track record at IRP in 1988 was a 75 and 3/4 inch car when the USAC rule was 76. And at that time, most of the cars were 70 or 72. And I found that maybe not so much indoors, but on the outdoor tracks, the longer wheelbase was definitely an advantage. I don't know. I mean, I don't really go around checking out other cars indoors that close to see if they are current with like a longer wheelbase or not. And of course, the tires are a great equalizer. And I think some of the shock research and technology that they have and the other cars are making them a little more drivable indoors. And you know, a lot of it's just the drivers of the actual cars themselves. Some of them are these guys that start in quarter midgets, so the quarter midget guys definitely have, I mean, the lifelong quarter midget guys definitely have an advantage indoors just because of the number of laps they've had on small tight tracks. So it's hard to, it all adds up to basically just kind of catching up with the Munchkins.
Now, your Munchkin has been VW powered from the start, but did you ever have an inkling or maybe an idea to build a Munchkin with a different engine in it?
Well, I've had a few guys ask me if it would accept a different engine as recently as 2 weeks ago. So, you know, it would take maybe a little bit of work, definitely like a different motor plate for sure, and maybe a little chassis modification. But I see no reason why you couldn't just bolt in another. I don't know if, well, it would have to be kind of a short four cylinder, actually. But I think one would go in there, no problem.
I would call you a very veteran driver. You've been around for quite a while. Basically, you know, as long as I can remember going to the races, you've been in competition almost every decade I've been going to the track. And I've been told these indoor races are very physical. In fact, we're talking the afternoon because you had to get your morning workout in. You're in tremendous shape, but how physically enduring are some of these longer races indoors where you're constantly turning?
Well, they, for the past 2 years, haven't been that much physically demanding. And for me personally, I didn't make the show last year, so it was very much not physically demanding last year. But when the track rubbers up, yeah, it is pretty physically demanding. My own personal workout, I get up to where I can do 60 or 70 push-ups at a time in my shoulders. And for the first time last year, I mean, up until last year, I had no power steering in my car. So last year I decided to go ahead and put power steering in it. And like I said, the track didn't really rubber up enough to test the power steering, but, you know, hopefully it's going to get a little more rubbered up this year and maybe the power steering will be a little more to my advantage. So, but you know, up till that point, I've just kept in shape with push-ups and crunchers and rowing exercises and just keeping my upper body in shape. And as far as the wind goes, it's the same thing with my, you know, with the cardio part of it. That's all, it's probably better now than it was 6 or 7 years ago for me personally, just because of my workout routine I've got now. So yeah, I guess I kind of lost sight of your question, but it's still physically demanding, but probably the last 3 years, it's not been that physically demanding as it was say 5 or 6 years ago. And I did have a talk with Larry Booth down at the PRI show, and he claims that he has another formula for the floor, which will keep rubber down.
That'll be good.
In the past, we've had no trouble putting rubber down, but it seems like the go-karts with their tire prep that they put on, they normally peel the rubber up that the midgets and the 600s have laid down. So he claims that with some investigation from the people out east, what they run on their floor, that he's got a concoction that's going to work for the Fort Wayne floor. So, you know, keep our fingers crossed. Hopefully it's going to be like a half-inch thick rubber like it used to be.
You obviously race a couple times a year, and you get out in some micros every now and then. This is probably your highest profile race. Are you planning on doing any other indoor races this winter besides Fort Wayne, or is Fort Wayne the only one on your schedule?
Fort Wayne is pretty much the only one on the schedule. The other ones, I believe, are all dirt, which I don't have a dirt ride per se. Still kind of working on one. We came close to a ride for the Chili Bowl, but I just learned today that I don't have a ride for the Chili Bowl. So, pretty much indoors with the pavements, what I got going so far.
Well, I may or may not have had a little bird tell me you had a possible Chili Bowl ride, hence why that question was
well,
there. So I'm sad to hear it didn't come together.
Yeah, you did have a little bird tell you that, but I found out today directly from the car owner that it's not going to be possible for him. So, we're talking next year now. I left my seat in the shop, so possibly for 2025 we got something going.
That would be awesome
and
to
I've ran a lot of Chili Bowl laps in the last month, and, of course, I got my micro out, I believe, only two times this summer by the time I got everything together on it, so... In prep for the future, I will run my micro more since I think the Miami County Speedway is open back up, which is only like an hour from my house. Plan on running there quite a bit on dirt. So from there, we'll just kind of see what happens and hope for the best.
And this year, you're going to have Joey Payne on your team driving, and he's obviously a veteran as well. What does he bring to the table, and what is it like being a teammate with him?
He brings protection for any rumbles that might happen. And I say that in a joking way. I mean, he's got a big heart, and he loves animals. And in the past, I've given him a couple boxes of Juju Bees because that's his favorite candy. But I found out this year you can't buy those things anymore. I don't think they make them. I got like the last box of them here in Fort Wayne. So. that won't happen. But, yeah, Joey and his girlfriend, Kimmy, she actually does all the tire prep. Between the three cars that we had last year, she has a heat gun and a tire scraper, and she would go to each car after they came off the track and scrape all the excess rubber off and prep them for the next time out. So she was, like, invaluable to the team. So, and she's planning on coming back along with Joey this year, so we're looking forward to that.
One last question. If we were talking to someone that had never been to the Rumble before, but the race fan, and you were trying to sell them on why they should go, what would you tell them?
I would say exciting races, pretty exciting races. A lot of race fans. It's just a lot of like-minded people that enjoy racing, and you'll see all types of racing from the midgets to the 600s to the wing 600s to go-karts and... Actually, the go-karts put on some of the most exciting races out there. So there's a little bit for everybody.
Well, I think that's one of the best sales pitches to go to the race I've heard. Well, Mike, best of luck coming up with the Rumble. It's great to see you involved in motorsports. You're one of the best minds I've ever seen in the sport. And I'm glad you're still an active participant.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot. And we'll keep in touch and hopefully see you there.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you for Mike Fedorchek taking time out of his busy schedule to join us this evening. Derek, to close the show, more High Limit World of Outlaw discussion tonight. I'm going to talk about a few things that came out over the past week. First of all, let's talk about the schedules. If you had to talk about the High Limit and the World of Outlaw schedule, was there one that impressed you more than the other, or was it more of a push, like they're both pretty equal?
I thought they were both pretty equal, really. I thought they... both kind of served the purpose of what they wanted to do. I thought the World of Outlaw schedule is maybe a little more intriguing this year than it's been in the last couple of years, but I don't think that it was any more intriguing than the high limit schedule, personally.
For me, I think both series actually intrigued me about the same things, which is odd, is the larger presence in Texas. Like, you see Outlaws at Cotton Bowl, Kennedale, High Limit, Texas Motor Speedway for High Limit. You know, you also see Meeker and RPM with shows, you know, Outlaws and High Limit doing all various of those tracks in Texas. That's like prime ASCS country. That's not where we've traditionally seen a lot of 410 racing in recent years.
Right. Missouri seemed to be like the hotbed of 410s this year too. They got a lot of shows, it seemed, on both schedule.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if you're on the West Coast, this whole situation has benefited you immensely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you look at the Big Pain shows at Skagit, the Dennis Roth Classic, the 100 grand at the Gold Cup. I mean, if High Limit doesn't come into existence, do those races happen? I highly doubt it.
Right. I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't see where that, and, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the perception of High Limit, too, like where you're at. Like, if you're in one of those areas like Texas or California, you're probably going to be a lot more excited about High Limit's existence. If you're from our area, it's kind of a mixed bag, I think, a little bit. At least for me, it is. I don't know about you.
Right, yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I was kind of surprised that High Limit was left off that area, really.
Well, I mean, there's no room for them to get in. I mean, it's prime out. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty well. Outlaws pretty much had that locked down.
Yeah.
I don't think what happened with the All Stars and how that all went down probably helped.
Right. I agree.
I mean, that could have, you know, Flow Racing already in the area might not be the most popular streaming service. And, like, I don't know. The way that all went down, I got the impression that probably it might be a while till you see it show any of those shows. But you never know. Strange bedfellows could be made in the past couple of years. Things that stood out to me on the Outlaw schedule, at least Jacksonville being back on the schedule. I love this. Cannot love this enough.
That was actually going to be my race that I was most looking forward to on the schedule. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's it's an awesome joint, and any of those bull rings are just cool to see, and the wings on them are awesome. So I'm really looking forward to that race.
The one to me on the Outlaw schedule, it might, you know, I don't really want to call it under the radar, but I mean, because we're all looking forward to the Crown Jewel races, right? We all look forward to the Nationals. We all look forward to the Kings Royal, all those things. Dennis Roth Classic, 83,000 to win. That's going to be insane. I think that race is going to be a crazy event. I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Also seeing Roll of Outlaws at Fremont and Wayne County. I think the Outlaws are going to be primed to get upset at Fremont. It's happened before. I've seen Frankie Kerwin Outlaw show there. And, heck, on that same weekend at Attica, I saw Joey Allen win. They went back-to-back. The Outlaws got swept that weekend. So, I mean, I don't know. Fremont, to me, could leave them primed for a big upset.
I agree with you. And, I mean, not only the regulars there, but Colt Duncan's so good there. And, I mean, they know how to get around there, that's for sure.
And, of course, on the High Limit side, Davenport Speedway. As soon as I saw that on the schedule, I was like, oh, yeah, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's obviously a big weekday race for them, and that should be an awesome race, I think.
I mean, if it's got me tuning in for late model races, you know it's good. I mean, I'm not going to do that. I've actually been there I've seen two heat races there of sprint cars before I got rained out about 25-ish years ago. But I've been wanting to go back. That's a really cool one. Of course, our local race, the Mace Thomas Classic, you know, with the High Limit Series. I was glad to see Butler land this show because quite often we kind of end up on the short stick of scheduling up in Michigan.
Exactly. And funny thing is, last time that Butler had a World Outlaws show was 2006 when the split happened then. Yeah. But this is probably going to be the best field to come into Butler really since I've been born. So,
you know, you think about the energy at that show last year. I know you weren't able to make it, but the energy at that All-Star show was probably one of the best I've seen in the past couple of years outside of the majors. I mean, it was really cool. That place, you could hear the fans over the cars in hot laps whenever someone was quickest in the group or quickest overall. And I mean, you could tell when Courtney went quick time in practice, and you could hear the crowd over the cars. I'm like, holy cow, this place is crazy. I'm just imagining what that place is going to be like with Rico Abreu and Brad Sweet rolling in there and this group, this great group of high limit cars. I mean, it is going to be off the charts.
I think excitement's going to be at an all-time high at Butler. I think it's going to be a place that you're going to want to be, that's for sure.
I also, you know, the Eagle race, I like that one on the high limit schedule too. I mean, it's big paying race at Eagle. Eagle's just an awesome racetrack. I thought that was actually one of the better shows last year, along with Kokomo. Those two, love those little racetracks. And Eagle and Kokomo on the high limit schedule, give me more of that.
One of the things I thought was pretty random about both schedules is the Ditch got on World of Outlaw and High Limit, and that's a really racy place, and I think those shows are both going to be really good.
Oh, yeah. That of all the places to get both series, was that the one we had on our list? No way.
I did not either.
Yeah, that was. I saw that, and it was kind of crazy. And, of course, both are making gigantic runs from the West Coast back east. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel probably most sorry for the guys driving truck with the High Limit series. I mean, you know, that one, the Northwest, the Port Royal, that's brutal. I mean, there's no way to avoid it. This isn't really a knock on them, but holy smokes, that is a trip. And then, but the Outlaws are doing it too. They're coming back to the West Coast from Ohio. So, I mean, you know, I guess there are probably guys that were on the Outlaw Tour if they were listening to this and did this in pickup trucks without air conditioning with open trailers. So I guess they're not feeling really sorry for anybody.
Yeah. They're like, what's he talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you guys have it rough in air quotes, exactly, right? Yeah. You know, that's exactly it. Now, you look at both rosters. You know, let's start with the High Limit roster first. What was probably your biggest surprise in the High Limit roster and your overall impression of the 12 drivers to be announced so far? Actually, 11. I had 12 because there's one that kind of slipped out in a video interview that we won't mention until it's official. But okay. 11 officially announced right now. Of those 11, what stood out to you?
I mean, I would say that just the overall intriguing factor of this series. You have the defending World of Outlaw champion. You have two of the biggest up-and-coming young drivers in Zeb Wise and Corey Day. I mean, you have Rico, who's probably the most exciting and popular driver in the nation, and he would have been the one that I would have said, this is the one that stands out the most until Corey Day signed. I didn't have him on my radar for joining either series, especially this year, and to see him on the World of, or the High Limit roster, I think he's going to be fun to watch. I think he's going to bring excitement to the series, and I think he's going to do a lot better than maybe some people who don't pay attention to the West Coast really expect.
The thing I used in my column today that I posted in the notebook was young with a high ceiling. And all these guys, and it's not just the young guys. Like, we know Day's got an extremely high ceiling. I mean, and same with, you know, Enrico's off the charts. But I mean, you look at some of these guys like Justin Peck, you know, that's a guy that I still think has some ceiling left there. I think that and that Tom Book team have not peaked out yet at all, you know, and Zeb Wise, another guy, tons of upward mobility there. I don't think he's reached his peak either. And guys like that, I mean, look at this. This would, like, it's an extremely intriguing roster. I think it's going to race really well. In fact, I would argue this is going to be probably, I didn't write this. I almost wrote it today, but I saved it for this. I think the roster would be more intriguing without Swede on it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because Swede's going to consistent them to death. I mean, he will just go out there and run, like, for the championship. Rico's going to keep him honest, but, I mean, you know, Swede is so good at just running really well, finishing races. You know, he's still heads-on the favorite to win the championship. I think if he wasn't in there, you think if Swede wasn't in here, would this be a toss-up for the championship?
Oh, yeah, I think that you would have maybe a handful of guys who could potentially win it. You know, someone like Spencer Mason is going to be real interesting because I think we sometimes, like, discredit outlaw drivers because they're just so consistently good, and they're kind of, like, I guess, boring, you could say, because they just go out there and they do their job every day. So where does someone like Spencer Mason land? Because He wasn't necessarily up in the World of Outlaws, but he's used to running the schedule. He's used to being consistent. And now where would he fall? So could he be someone who, if Brad Sweet wasn't there, finishes in that top spot or top two or top three? So I think he's going to be one that's going to be real interesting to watch this year.
I'm also wondering if Rico can be consistent enough to be a championship contender as well. He's right. Going to win races, right? We know he's going to do that. Can he keep the consistency, keep the DNFs on, low enough to win the championship? That's going to be key because he isn't really, they chased the midweek deal last year, which it's kind of running, but it's not grinding away at 50 races, right? So, I think that's going to be key for that group. But he does have Ricky Warner. So, nothing's going to fall off the car. Let's put it that way.
And no knock on Rico, it'd be anyone who hadn't run a series before. When you have a DNF or you finish 15th or 20th in a race, no one really cares when you're not following a series. But when all of a sudden it counts for you in the points, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I think if he didn't have Ricky in his corner, it'd be a whole different scenario. But, I think that makes him a championship contender right off the bat. But, the roster top to bottom, though, really impressed. I'm really impressed with the turnout. And they're not done yet. There's still some undecideds out there and a couple that I know they're going to announce that are already signed up. So, we'll have to see how it plays out. Now, on the World of Outlaws side, it's kind of the opposite. It's anchored by a lot of veteran drivers and a lot of the best ones in the sport.
Right.
We're looking at this in, Shewhart, Shots, Gravel. Right there, you got guys that are basically contenders at any major event, any championship, and go out and win it.
Yep.
But the Crowley kid, I was really surprised Landon Crowley went out and committed to the World of Outlaws. That's the one that caught me off guard.
He's only not even 16 yet, right?
He will turn 16 right before Volusia. It's amazing what virtual school can do for people these days.
Yeah, and he doesn't have, obviously, a ton of 410 experience, so it's going to be interesting to see how quickly he, gets into the swing with the new team and with the 410 and new tracks and bigger tracks, and it's just going to be interesting to follow him this year.
A couple of things that are going to help him, the Mid-South connection. Jason Sides and Crowley's are kind of from the same neck of the woods, so talking the same language, a lot of the same background, same backstories and stuff. So coming from the same background, but also, you look at the way, I'm not comparing these two either, but the way Donnie Schatz did it, he didn't really, he went right from local stuff right out to the Outlaw Tour and just ground until he, got good. It's a tough way to do it. You have to be mentally tough to do it. It'll be interesting to see how the Crowley kid progresses. I don't know if they'll have to get a slump buster in there every now and then to maybe boost up his confidence, getting beat up by those guys every night. But we can't discount some of the younger guys on this thing too. Giovanni Selzy, I don't think he's been talked about enough in this thing. He could be a championship contender in this thing next year.
I agree. I feel like I don't know what happened, but at one time he was kind of neck and neck with Buddy as the two up and coming guys. And then all the talk started becoming about Buddy, and Gio just kind of kept going about his business, kept winning races, and just doesn't necessarily get the publicity that Buddy gets. So, I've always been a big fan of Gio, and I do think that he is someone who can be up there in that top three of the World of Outlaws for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. The rosters on both sides, when they go to the big races too, it's going to be really intense, I think. When we go to the Kings Royal, we go to Knoxville, we go to whatever the thing is at Eldora before the Kings Royal is called. Yeah. forgot. And the Williams Grove National Open. But some of these other big ping races too, like those things, when these two groups get together, I wonder how intense, or if it's going to be more intense than it already has been the past several years.
Well, as fans and media, they're going to talk about it. Well, whoever wins from this series or that series or not from a series, that's going to be probably about the headline news for a while until this kind of, dies down a little bit.
It'll be interesting if we see either series throw some shade at the other one if one of them wins one of their races and stuff. Like we see college football and college basketball teams and their social teams do every now and then, like just throw like a little jab out there every now and then, I'm all for it. I mean, just, you know, let's have some fun with this if we got to do it and make it happen. So, well, Derek, I think this is going to wrap up this edition of the Open Wheel Spectacular. I was glad you were able to join me in the co-pilot seat tonight.
Well, I thank you for having me. I'm hoping that maybe we'll get in the groove and I'll get a little better. I'm kind of a rookie here, I guess. So
we're ready to pull the tape off. You're good to go. So
all right.
Of course, on social media at TJ Sideways, TJSidewaysWord.com on Facebook. Of course, check out the website, TJSideways.com. Lots of material coming up this week. Some more writing about the situation with the High Limit, the World Outlaws, and some other materials. So for Derek and everyone else, thank you for listening. Have a good evening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to the Open Wheel Spectacular.